Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Our mission is to provide stories and resources that will give you inspiration to explore all of the possibilities that your life can be. The possibilities are limitless, and guess what? So are you. It begins with believing. Believing in yourself, believing that the future is yours to write, believing that you can not only write your desired future, but that you have everything that you need to write it, edit it as needed, and fully and wonderfully live it. And you don't have to wait. You can start today. The pen truly is in your hand. I cannot wait to share this week's conversation with you. Three different miracles during Easter weekend of 2012. That led her to trade off her multiple award-winning sales career to become the author, speaker, and coach that she is today. She lives her passion by helping entrepreneurs who are in deep spiritual change in life navigate towards their soul's purpose and align to their soul's identity. She resides in Austin, Texas with her amazing husband, two children, and her dog. Her name is Sylvia Worsham, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bobby. It's such a pleasure to be on.
Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself before we jump in?
Sure. I'm an author, a speaker, and a trainer and coach here in Austin, Texas. I'm a mom of two, 17 and 8-year-olds, so quite a gap. And I didn't start off as an author. I started off as a high achiever, stressed achiever, I call myself. Mm-hmm. Because I came from the sales environment, corporate sales and pharma sales, which pharmaceutical sales.
That's a tough market.
And that is a very tough market and a very highly, highly accountable, highly achievable space and very competitive. So been there, done that. On to the next act.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm still thinking about the sales career because I've worked a lot in that arena and with some pharma sales. It's not just competitive. It's also like it changes so fast.
Yes. Very dynamic. You have a lot of, I worked for Pfizer. And so Pfizer had this theme almost like for years of like, we're going to acquire and acquire and acquire and integrate. Well, that integration really put a lot of stress on their people because there were divisions that were dissolved. And so people were constantly thinking, when is the next layoff going to happen? And so that adds to that stress. Yeah. But it's also an environment, as you know, because you worked in it, that no matter how much you give, they always want more. That's what makes it very cutthroat. There's always a big target on your butt if you're someone that's high achiever, always winning competitions and awards. You've got this bullseye in the back of you. And so that pressure can be very hard to take. And I was in a highly competitive market. I was in the hospital division for Pfizer. And at the time my first husband asked for a divorce, I was getting promoted. And my senior vice president and regional manager looked at my territory and said, well, you've taken over this underperforming territory. And let me explain what I mean by that. I had over 200 reps I was competing with. I was competing with California reps. I'm in Texas and I am second to last in the region. So I'm dragging these guys' sales numbers through the mud. And so they have this territory as like under a magnifying glass. And so they basically told my boss, she has 6 months to turn that territory around. And the rep who had it previously never did anything with new products. So I had 6 months to add these products onto formulary status, which is not an easy thing to do for those that are in that market. And these were high priced items. So I was competing with medications that were, you know, $20 versus mine that was like in the $1,000 range. That's going to be tough to do.
That's right.
And then divorce on the personal side of things, that tends to put a different amount of stress on you.
Huge amount of stress. But now you won several awards though in that position, right?
Yes. Within the same year I got divorced, I became number one in the region and number two in the country in sales. And so I was working upwards of 50 to 60 hour work weeks, which some of the listeners will be able to relate to. Because yeah. Once again, it's those markets that you are going to strive and strive and strive. And I had a belief. I was raised in a Mexican household and my father came from Monterrey. He moved to the United States and was a doctor in the States. And so he was a perfectionist and a high achiever, and he modeled that to his kids. And so his idea of success was you need to prove your worth to this country. And that meant the size of your paycheck. And so when you're modeled that and your subconscious mind is like feeling that, and that's the parenting style, you grew up believing you're not enough unless you achieve and achieve perfectly.
That's right.
So that perfectionism and that high achievement, when they're based from fear, as a coach, I can tell you, this is not a good way to be, because you will burn yourself out very, very fast. And you can run into a medical crisis before you know it. And that's what happened to me in 2012, a huge medical crisis. And my stress levels were just very, very high at that point. So,
yeah. Oh my goodness. Sylvia, there's so much I want to explore there. I'm writing notes here. Okay. So first of all, before we get to the health crisis, you said so many things in there. When you said it's almost like your self-worth is attached to the success, right? Which is a form of the, I'll be happy when, you know, I can feel good about myself when I can feel successful when. That is like one of the most elusive traps that we can fall into. And I think high achievers are especially prone to it.
Very much so. Yeah. Because the perfectionism piece is oftentimes in there. High achievers tend to be perfectionists. They're type A personalities. And when they don't achieve perfectly and they don't gain that goal that now is what you've attached your happiness to, then what? Now you're a failure, because that's the mindset you've prepared, you're operating from. And for me, it was to end up in sales was a prime breeding ground for high achievers. Mm-hmm. Prime.
Because absolutely.
They're always pushing you to get more and more and more. And these big companies, that's what it's about the bottom line. It's not about the connections or the relationships with their reps. It's what can you do for me mentality.
Yep. Absolutely. Another thing I have to ask you about too, because I mean, I used to do a lot of sales coaching. I spent 14 years in that space. And when I have coached people who have taken on underperforming territories, specifically when the person before them hadn't been doing very much with it, because that is a tough hole to get out of. That is a really,
my gosh,
it's a tough hole, right?
Yes.
But now,
huge.
So many times, those were the people who it was either people like you who said, hey, I don't care what happened before, I'm going to make something new happen. Or there was a lot of I was given this bad territory. They just set me up for failure. How did you avoid that kind of thinking trap?
You know, it's interesting because at the time I'm going through change, I felt a prompting from God. He placed a desire for me to become number one. And I trusted that. I trusted that. And I leaned into God because as you know, and as I discussed earlier, I'm going through a divorce. So I'm journaling a lot and I'm clearing my mind of the outside noise, because the outside noise and your ego identity is going to tell you can't do it, because that's your past programming, right? So to modify that, you interrupt those thoughts and you tell yourself, I believe in myself. And even if at the time you don't believe it, you lean into it at every single day. It's a consistency factor that goes into it. And I believed in my heart I would become number one, because I had been told, like, it came down from leadership. I heard it, that they didn't think I was the right person for the job. And in my mind, Bobby, I told them, you'll be sitting in the audience and I will be standing on that stage and you will swallow the words you just spoke.
That's right.
Watch me. And I just started to believe and lean on God but most importantly, believe that I could be there. And I started to visualize that I would stand on stage giving that talk to the region. Mm-hmm. And it happened. It happened because every day, no matter how many rejections I got, and I got so many, I got so many doctors that said, you don't belong in this hospital. What are you doing here? I began to use all of the skills I had learned as a primary care representative, developing relationships with the nursing staff. I developed relationships with surgery departments, with every single department in that hospital. And pretty soon, they were the ones that were introducing me to those key players that mm-hmm. were the decision makers. Yep. And I started to turn those people over slowly, but I did it by developing relationships. And I knew how to do that. For those that are listening that are in these holes, right now it's a different environment. This was back in 2008, 2009. So we're talking about like 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. And the environment has changed dramatically.
A lot.
Because of COVID, because of everything that occurred then, the rules are a lot more strict on how to get into these institutions. But honestly, there's always a way, guys. There's always an angle.
There's always a way.
And even when I was shut out of these institutions, I basically found those ways by understanding the rules and regulations and then working within that framework to use it to my advantage. So for example, when one hospital I wasn't allowed in for a long time, I would sit in their coffee shop and I would pretend to enter reports, and I knew where to sit because I knew my surgeons would walk from their, you know, lunch area to the ICU, to the intensive care unit. And a lot of my products were used in that arena. So I sat there and they would come up to me and have coffee with me. The director of pharmacy couldn't do anything about it because I was within their rules and framework.
Yeah. But see, that's tenacity. It no, really is.
I can't do this.
I mean, but Sylvia, because I've worked with so many high achieving salespeople over the years, and these are the types of stories, like the doors that are closed, like, because it could seem like a closed door.
Yes.
For someone with that level of tenacity, like, no, there is no such thing. Like there is a way. So I love that. Something else we kind of skipped on it a little bit, but I want to make sure we cover it or at least mention it more, is the thing around. You were talking about, oh my God, now I'm blanking on it.
Okay.
Oh, it was when you were just talking there. Because you had said that that you believed it, right? And then it's one of those things that when we believe something like that, because you said you didn't even know how you were going to do it.
No.
That's not the important thing. It's believing it. And then because when you believe it, you start taking actions.
Action.
Right?
Yes.
And it's like, have you read Atomic Habits by James Clear?
Yes. And I receive his newsletter every Thursday.
So his newsletter is amazing. Constantly. You know, and one of the things he talks about is like, even if you can't, let's say that you're dedicated to your fitness, right? Mm-hmm. Even if all you can do, like, let's say you're super busy on the day when you're supposed to do your weights. And he's mm-hmm. like, because sometimes that happens to him. So he's like, you know what? On those days, I go downstairs, I go to my gym, and I do 2 squats. Because he said, if that's all I can do, that's all I can do. But you don't break that habit because you're telling yourself, this is the type of person that I am. And yes. I think that's kind of what I heard in your story a little bit too. Like you start taking those actions.
Because you're creating the identity of
that's
a winner, right? And to create the identity relies on what you're doing daily, consistently mm-hmm. daily, whether you feel like it or not, you do it. And you go and you modify it at times because at times you don't have the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And you work within that framework.
That's right.
But the key word here is consistent because you are creating the identity. You mm-hmm. start hanging out with people, as we were talking earlier before we even started the interview, is I want to hang out with people that are authors now because that's who I am now. And I don't want to be the most, the smartest person in the room because then I'm not learning. I want to be with smarter people in every aspect of my life. Even when I play pickleball, I do that. I play with much better players than me. And if I lose, I learned. I learned something. I learned how I can be better in other aspects. And that is something you can apply in sales consistently.
That's right. It's that consistent action. And, but you're right. That's what starts to shape our identity.
Yes.
And it's interesting too, that this has come up in a number of ways, you know, because I do a lot of content creation and I post on LinkedIn and I post on Medium. And, you know, it's easy to fall into the trap of, because everyone's trying to sell the, oh, you know, we can help you get a million views on your posts, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So everyone wants viral. But I just saw an article last week. This is from, I don't know, someone like maybe the top 10 people who, you know, content creators on LinkedIn. And they're like, listen, consistency trumps viral every day.
Yes.
Every day. It's that consistent action. So, okay. Love that. Now I want to know, you mentioned the health crisis. Was that back in 2012? When did that happen?
That was in 12. And okay. At this point, I've been single for 3 years and I started dating who would become my second husband. And he's invited us to Louisiana, my boy and I. And so my boy is probably like six now. It's been 2.5 years. And days before I jump on an airplane from South Texas to Houston, I start getting this pain in my chest and it's pretty pronounced. And at this stage wow. in my life, I am exercising 7 days a week. So my identity is of an athlete.
That's right.
And I'm a top performer at Pfizer. So I'm thinking it's probably stress because I'm working too hard. I'm working 50 to 60 hour work weeks. I'm a single mom. It's go, go, go every day.
Yep.
And so I ignore it. But my mother, coming from a medical family, I have both siblings are doctors and my dad's a doctor. And my mother stops me and says, before you get on that flight, can you just please call your brother? And so he's rounding in the hospital and I call him. So in all fairness to this guy, he doesn't see me clinically because I think if he had seen me clinically, he wouldn't let me get on that flight in the first place. But so he tells me, you know what, your age and everything I see about you and know about you, it's probably this. So I'm just going to give you over the counter. You'll be okay. But it's really painful is what he tells me. So I'm like, okay. So I get on a flight. My mother is like, please don't get on the flight. You don't look good. But I'm in love and I'm a single mom. And this guy is wanting my son to meet his family. So I know this is probably intending marriage proposal soon. So I'm going to get on that flight. And I get on and we walk off and he takes one look at me and he goes, my gosh, you're pale. Like, I think we should just spend the night instead of driving to Louisiana overnight. Saves my life, right? Because we spend the night and this pain, Bobby, jolted me out of bed like at 3 a.m. It was like 50 knives were piercing my chest. And my brother had said it was going to be painful. So I'm like, geez, he wasn't kidding. Like, it's really painful. But somewhere deep inside of me, a prompting comes through very, very clearly. Lean forward and you'll be able to breathe. So I'm sitting up in bed. My son's in the next bed, right? Donnie is like in another room. And I'm like leaning forward and I'm able to take deeper breaths. And by the grace of God, I don't die that night. Yeah. So that's miracle one. I received 3 miracles within 72 hours. So that's miracle one. And the next morning I call my brother. I'm like, I don't think this feels right. Mm-hmm. And I explain, and then he hears that I've gotten on a flight and he's like, get to the emergency room now, like stat. And so we get to St. Luke's Episcopal Hospital. I walk in unassisted, but I'm walking very slowly because it's very painful. And they do a scan of my lungs and a doctor comes into my ER room and he says, a woman in your condition should not be sitting up talking to me right now. You have 2 large pulmonary embolisms in your left lung, which meant that they went through your heart the night before and didn't kill you. It didn't stop your heart. And I'm just sitting there stunned. And he's like, so you're not going to Easter because this is Easter weekend. You're not going anywhere for the next couple of days. And he said, and your liver looks abnormal. So we're going to take a scan tomorrow to see what's going on. And so by now, my mom has been notified. And now she's flown up, picked up my son. My sister-in-law has flown up with my mom, picked up my son, flown back, right? And they do a second scan the next day, and I get 6 doctors in my room. And, you know, you and that's I being good. Both in sales, that's not a good thing. I call it the firing squad in interviews because I get these words, they come at me like bullets, right? They say, you know, a possible liver transplant, you have a massive blood clot in your vena cava. And you know, for those that are medical-based listeners, you know what the vena cava is. But for those that are not, that's the main vein that supplies blood to your organs. It's almost clotted all the way through. And so they said, you're about to lose your liver. So the transplant team is on your case. But we're going to start this medication. And they go through the list of like all the bad things that can happen. And when they get to death and hemorrhagic stroke, I just remember closing my eyes and visualizing falling into God's arm in total and full surrender and acceptance of whatever fate awaited me in the ICU. And they rushed me there. And the next morning, they're going to find out whether this therapy worked, because if it didn't, then they have to go the interventional route, which is a real serious problem, because I could die on the table.
Yeah. You know?
So I have that looming over my head, but I've surrendered to God and I've told them, if you'll give me a second chance, I'll devote my life to you. And a woman with the Catholic diocese walks into our room. It's now Easter Sunday morning. And Donnie's in the room with me. And so we form a circle and we start reciting the Our Father. And the part where it says, thy will be done. There is a love so immense that just envelops the entire room. And I felt cradled in God's loving arms like a child. And he's protecting me and he's letting me know in that prayer that he's heard me. And peace just completely washes over my entire being. And I remember knowing I was okay, just instantly. And she leaves and my boyfriend turns to me and says, you felt them too, didn't you? And I could not say yes. I just kind of mumbled it out. And so that second miracle is his visit in the ICU. And the third and final is they wheel me in to see, you know, what had happened with the medication, had it worked or not, what were the decision. I already knew, but the doctors didn't. And they were not hopeful because they had given my family a 20% chance of me surviving even the night. So I don't know this, but my family does. And they wheel me back there. And even the nurses that were there with me said, your face looked radiant. You just looked, you looked angelic almost. Like the light was just emanating from you. And 20 minutes later, the doctors come out and they're like incredulous. They just cannot believe it. And nothing's there, you know, like you should have holes in your lungs and there's like nothing. You're completely cured. It's a miracle. And I'm inwardly knowing like, yep, he already told me, so I'm good. I already knew that, but thanks for the confirmation. And so that's the third and final miracle within that 72-hour time frame that I talk about.
That's amazing. So
that story.
Yeah. So then no residual effects from that?
Nothing. No scarring, no holes, nothing. It was as if I had never had them in the first place, which is miraculous.
It is amazing. That is truly amazing. My God, I can't imagine what it was like for your family.
My father and my brother being doctors. My sister is a physician as well. And she was crying when she called me. And I'm like, but I'm the one in ICU. Why are you crying?
Why are you crying? Wow. That is amazing. That is amazing. And it was right after that when did you leave your position shortly after that at Pfizer?
I wish I could tell you that that's what happens. But when you operate from a fear space like I did, and you don't feel enough, your ego is going to dictate your actions a lot of times. It wouldn't be until Donnie asked for my hand in marriage and I tried to move to Austin with Pfizer and Pfizer wouldn't give me an opportunity, no lateral transfers, even though I had been there a multiple award winner with them.
Unreal.
And so I'm forced to look at other jobs within sales, right? So, but the very first thing that they tell me is you don't have the relationships in Austin. So we're going to deny you over and over again. You're not going to get a job. And I remember just leaning into God and saying, you've blessed us so much. You know what I need. I'm relying on you. Open the door for me. And within days of that prayer, I get a phone call back from a medical device company. KCI at the time, it was the WombVac company. Now it's, I think, Acelity or something. I don't know anymore. And they've bought and sold so many times. But they gave me an opportunity. And so I moved to Austin with a medical device job. But I soon find out that this second chance, God is intending a whole different chapter for me. And what I learned during those years is I really need to lean in to him and patience on his timing, which is not something that as a high achiever and perfectionist, I'm used to. I'm not a very patient person per se. So to learn that takes years. And what happens next is I end up having a miscarriage and realizing that, you know what, this life isn't for me anymore. And I step down and retire. And within 2 years of that medical crisis in 2014, I become a stay-at-home parent. So talk about a huge transition for that a high achiever like me. And the problem here is that there's like an identity crisis that's happening now because I no longer have a paycheck. And so my worth, my self-worth that I had tied to a paycheck or the amount of a paycheck, success is now gone.
That's right.
And God is like going, yep, that does not belong here. I'm going to chisel that away and it's going to hurt. And this is not going to feel comfortable for you. But, and I detail all this in Journey to Me, Trust the Wisdom of Change, which is my first book. Those years were years I didn't want to write about because they were too painful for me to write about. Yeah. And he kept pushing me. You got to write about this because there's something about you that you need to understand. Mm-hmm. Your worth and your significance are not tied to the size of your paycheck. They reside within you, like your happiness resides within you. Kind of like what we were talking about, when you get there, that magical place that will give us a certainty and the perfectionism, those are all illusions our mind creates.
That's right.
To make it feel comfortable in our misery, really, because why do we want to stay in fear and operating from fear when what God wants is he wants us to live in joy. Enjoy life. Life isn't about these achievements. It's about the joy in the journey.
That's
right. And that was the toughest one for me because I was comfortable in my fear. I mean, fear had been my friend forever, been my constant companion.
That's right. Okay. So now I have to ask you this.
Sure.
Did you, because I love the way you put that, fear had been your constant companion. When you were in the midst of it all those years, did you know it was fear-based then?
No, I don't understand fear-based then until I become a coach in 2017. And that happens like 3 years later.
Okay.
And I get another prompting as I'm journaling my baby girl. Now I've had a baby girl and my husband travels a lot, right? So I'm a stay-at-home parent and I'm getting comfortable in that space. And so God is like, no, 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 you're not going to get comfortable here because this is now why I had you retire in the first place. He starts prompting me, call Bridget. Bridget was my mentor at the John Maxwell team. I had taken a mastermind from her years before I even met Donnie. During the years I was divorced, single mom, I started to do some personal development courses. And she had led a 12-week mastermind that I was part of. Mm. And at the time she invited me. She said, you know, we're forming a team at the John Maxwell division. Do you want to come? But because I was operating from fear, and I needed certainty through a paycheck, that entrepreneurial journey was just not for me in those years. And so I had it in the back burner. But now God is like, no, 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 now call her. And so I call her. I learned at this point in my relationship with God that when I trusted him, when I leaned into him, he always came through abundantly for me. Always. Mm-hmm. And so now it's an easier thing for me to just act, even though I don't know why I'm doing this or how I'm going to do this. And she gets me connected. And within 3 months, I'm in Florida and I'm sitting in the audience. Paul Martinelli, the president of the John Maxwell Companies at the time, is on stage and he's talking about his belief systems, about believing he had been stupid. And all of a sudden, I just start crying because now I understand why I married my first husband and how beliefs get formed. And so that kind of plants that seed in my mind of like, discover what beliefs were at your core and how they steer your choices in life. So that's an answer to your question. It didn't come until 3 years later.
Wow.
As I become a coach.
Yeah. But I think there's so much there. And I know when we were talking before we started recording, I had mentioned that I think that when you're in the middle of it, you don't know that it's you're acting from fear.
No.
You know, what are some of the, I know like you'd mentioned, earlier you said something about the outside noise and our ego. And ego I've been reading a lot of Wayne Dyer and some different books that way. Ego is attached to fear, right? Yes. Okay. Can you speak more about the ego and, you know, like dropping the ego, quieting the ego, that type of stuff?
My pleasure. It's actually one of the, it's part of the blueprint I share in Journey to Me is I always talk about two identities, kind of battling it out when you go through major change, through turning points. And ego identity comes into play a great deal as you make any change in life. Within a month, maybe 2 months, that's when your thoughts start to come at you. And your ego really can't, it's not necessarily a bad thing when you look at it. Your ego is your self-image. So you have to kind of look at your self-image and say, what do I believe about myself currently? Right. Mm-hmm. So at that time in my life, and 17, even before becoming a coach, or even when I'm operating as a pharmaceutical rep, I don't believe I'm enough. I don't believe I'm worthy unless I achieve perfectly. I am second best, you know, in my relationships with men. And all these beliefs come from your trauma and come from your life experiences and your modeling. And so I always picture this with ego identity. Ego identity, one way to quiet it is to journal or to do some exercise, any way that you could quiet your mind. So some people exercise, some walk in nature, some write like I do, others meditate, others pray, whatever works for you. I would start doing that today. And I would start small because as James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits, you got to build the habit. And so you start maybe even for some cases, 1 minute for a week, 2 weeks, and then you move on to 3 minutes and 5 minutes and however works for you. I like working in 5 minute increments because that's what works for me. But you choose whatever it is. So that identity is going to be based your belief systems. And so one, another way that you can start identifying it is also what patterns of behavior are showing up that are attached to that, those fearful feelings. The feeling is the clue that your mind gives you as to why, what you believe about yourself. And it's usually attached to these thoughts that promote it constantly. So when those thoughts come, one way is you can interrupt that thought and just call it what it is. It's a lie. This probably created when you were a little kid and your mind did it to protect you. But now as an adult, it is preventing you. And what we call in coaching, it's sabotaging your joy in life. It's just coming in to really just
mess with you.
Feel comfortable and certain, right? One of the main basic needs, human needs, is to feel secure and certain. Well, that's a very common need for little kids. And so the mind, the patterns of the mind develop very early on. And the more power you give them, the more you feed them, the more powerful they become in you. And that's why they say the ego gets really big. It's because you feed it. So sit quietly and realize, how are these things showing up in my life? How is my need for control showing up? Do I like talk to my kids in a certain way to get them to move faster during the day? What can I do differently to change that up, to make it more loving, right? To transition from that fear to what I call in Journey to Me, soul identity. That's the identity that you really were created to be. This perfect human being with immense gifts for the betterment of humanity. And it's always been there, but your fear, your ego identity kind of like covers it up and you build this armor around you and it's nice and comfortable and not scary, but you're miserable,
right?
You're stressed and you're making the wrong choices in your life. You know, you're attracting the wrong people into your environment. So you can interrupt it. You can call it what it is and you can start understanding what feelings are attached to that, those patterns.
Yeah.
If it's doubt, when doubt shows up, have a plan in place. You know, how are you going to interrupt those thoughts?
You know, because
you gotta. If you do not change the way you think about yourself and what you believe about yourself, you're going to stay in the exact same spot for years.
I've heard other people talk about it too. And it's something I believe in, to give those like that inner, the inner critic or that inner whatever, give it a name. So when it does show up, you can say, oh, that's just, you know, so-and-so, thank you, you're lying to me again. And it sounds so stupid and ridiculous, but it works.
It works. It works big time.
It works.
I used to call it the name that I don't like to be called as a little kid, because I'm a Sylvia, right? And in Mexico, my mother's name is Sylvia too, and they would call me Silvita, and I hated that name.
It's like, it's a pretty name.
Call me that. And so I would call it Silvita. The Silvita is coming out, you know, to play. Right?
But that's good.
And my higher name was Carol, because one of the models I picked was Carol Burnett. Carol had a lot of tenacity. She's originally from San Antonio, Texas. And she's a funny lady. And I modeled after her perseverance in becoming these identities. So my higher self or my soul identity is Carol. And my lower ego self is Silvita. You know, and she comes out to play from time to time.
Yeah. She's always going to show up, but it's okay.
It's okay.
You know, so when you were talking, because you were talking about, you know, the divine being, and you said, you know, you gave, like, with your hand gesture, you know, like, fear is kind of like it covers it up, right? And that made me think about something you said earlier when we were talking, and you said it's that process of being the chiseling, like, went through that after you left corporate, and it was like, can you speak to that chiseling process a little bit?
Oh, it even gives me chills, because I'm like, there's times that you're not going to feel comfortable. It's not going to feel comfortable. This is going to be very uncomfortable. But I got to tell you, when you have a vision of who you want to be, and that's a big piece of this, guys, is creating this bold, beautiful vision. You're not in there yet. And let me explain what I mean by that. This chiseling process is where the ego identity is going to battle you and battle your soul identity. And you got to make a choice. Who's going to win? The evil wolf or the good wolf? And that, you know, that tribal parable in Native American history of which one wins, the evil or the good wolf. Well, we all have those wolves inside of us. Mm-hmm. And when you feed the evil by, like, going back to old patterns of behavior and feeding them by yelling at your children, being impatient with others, being judgmental, you're feeding that part of you that you don't love.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you interrupt it, even when it doesn't feel comfortable, once again, this word, I know we keep saying it over and over, Bobby, but it has so much power. The consistency of going to it and doing it. You are basically telling your subconscious programming, your mind, that you are the boss.
That's right.
You are the boss, not old programming, old traumas, old ways of living and thinking. And the more you do it, even when you do those days that you kind of fall off the wagon, that you don't do certain things, get back on it.
Yeah.
Give yourself big doses of grace, because this is a tough thing to go through, but it's so worthwhile.
Yeah.
And when you get from fear of sight to the fear of joy, and that whole journey that you go on, and that whole chiseling process that God has you on, or your higher source of power, whoever that may be for you. For me, it's God. But for some, it's the universe or energy.
Mm-hmm.
Know and realize, lean on that knowing and that intuitiveness. You know what you need to do. You're just scared. You're scared of the unknown. You're scared of the outcome, and you want certainty. But let me reaffirm this. That's an illusion that your mind has created. Mm-hmm. And so I'm giving you things that I was a stubborn child of God, man. If there was a hard way of doing this, I was going to be on it, because
that's right.
I punished myself for even the achievements I achieved with Pfizer, because I felt like I had abandoned my kid, my firstborn. And I told and I believed those lies. It can be very painful when you continuously engage with these beliefs. And as women, you can shame yourself and guilt yourself, especially if you're a single parent, of not making the right choices. But once again, I'm going to say this as lovingly as I can. Give yourself grace and realize that you did the best job you were consciously aware of doing, because we're not conscious that a lot of why we operate is totally at the core, like deepest core of us.
Yeah.
But when we consistently do what we need to do to clear that noise out of our head and get in touch with the inner parts of our mind, our intuitive nature. We all have it, guys. We all have that power. We just never use it. Mm-hmm. Get in touch with that side of you. And when you feel that prompting, it doesn't, when your mind tells you, you can't do that, you tell your mind, no, you can. You will. And the how is not up to you. The how is up to your higher source of power.
Right.
You
and
just
trust that.
Trust it and step into change. And believe me when I tell you that when you step into change, you actually know you're on the right path. When you step in there and you feel peace, it's moments before that you're just like, that's just your mind. That's different. That's your ego identity messing with you. But when you step in and you feel peace, you know you're on the right path for your soul. This is who you're meant to be.
Yeah. There's like a beautiful alignment.
Yes.
You know, one thing I want to make sure, because I loved the thing about the big dose of grace, right? And you said it too, like trust that you did, like you made the best decisions you did at that time. I don't know. I was listening. I don't know if it was Eckhart Tolle or if it was Richard Rohr. But he said, you know, we often go back and we blame ourselves for past decisions, past actions. And he's like, whoever it was brilliant, whoever it was said, but think about it. You're judging yourself with your current awareness.
Yeah.
Looking back at it, you didn't have the awareness back then. So give yourself the grace.
Yeah.
Okay. I know we're getting close to time. You said the thing about change, you know, the turning points and change. What would be some quick advice for someone who is contemplating a big change, but they're still holding themselves back?
Turn inward for your answers. Your answers are not outside of you. They're not in your achievements. They are within you. And that intuitive nature, whatever you do, go and get very comfortable with that piece of you and get rid of that noise, outside noise. So if that means shutting off social media for a week, a month, whatever that looks like for you. If that means not turning to Yahoo News and looking at all the horrible things going on in the world, if that means taking quiet walks in nature, whatever that means for you, do that consistently every day and trust and believe. And if you don't have the belief, borrow it from someone that you consider a role model, someone who is currently living the life that you desire, and step in there, trusting that the how will come to you. Mm-hmm. It will be delivered to you in the form of angels on earth, I call them. Messages come to you and you feel that pull and you feel in your inward being that as you're making that change, that you are on the right path and you just keep going. And the more you do that, the more your path will be revealed to you.
Yeah. I love that. And that there's a trusting. And I also liked what you said, look to someone who's doing it, right? Let them be your inspiration. Because here's the thing. I don't think anybody's immune to this stuff.
No.
Right? We've all had to walk through that version of fear. And so I think that's really great advice too. Oh my gosh, there's been so much good stuff in here. I cannot believe how time has flown by, but I want to respect your time. Where can people find you? Tell us more about the book, all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. So Journey to Me, Trust the Wisdom of Change is available anywhere in the United States and internationally because you're able to order it via Ingram Sparks and Amazon. Or if you want an autographed copy of the book, I can leave it in the show notes, my email address. You can email me directly and I'll send you an invoice. And that's been available since October of 2021. That's when it was published. Nice. I am now currently working on several collaborative books. So if you're someone who has a book inside of you, write and publish your book was just released on Amazon. Grab your copy. Only authors tell their stories and their own processes of getting their books published. So that would be a book for you guys. And lastly, I'm available on all social media sites except TikTok because I just don't do TikTok. But the main page where you can see a lot of my work is LinkedIn. And just go on there and search up Sylvia Worsham. And I'm on there. Facebook, I'm on there as Coach Sylvia Worsham. Instagram, same thing, Coach Sylvia Worsham. And really, any questions I can answer for any of your listeners, just direct them to me, Bobby, and I'd be more than happy to address any questions they had about the interview.
Perfect. Perfect. And I'll put all that in the show notes. I appreciate that. Any final words as we wrap up?
You guys are amazing people out there. You have such light inside of you, and your light needs to shine so brightly. So whatever you need to do to get out of that fear-based identity, do it. Do it. The time is now. There's no reason to wait for a major turning point like my health crisis, because you may not get a second chance at this. If your desire is to step into change right this minute, do it now. Don't wait, and know that the how will come to you.
Perfect. Wonderful way to end. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Bobby.
Here are some of my thoughts on that conversation. Number one, could you relate when Sylvia said that she was not just a high achiever, but a stressed achiever? I don't know about you, but I know that I could relate to that. It seems like I've spent so much of my life pushing and striving and achieving, and that's certainly a part of who I am. And what I've come to realize is that it isn't all of who I am. And I want to create more space in my life so that the rest of me has a chance to emerge in this next chapter of my life. Number two, it is such a trap to believe that you're not enough unless you achieve and achieve perfectly. Number three, it is incredibly important to clear your mind of the outside noise, because that noise and the ego will get in the way, and it will tell you that you can't do it, that you're not enough, that you're not good enough, whatever, blah, 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 right? It goes on and on and on. So how are you going to interrupt the thoughts that come to block you? Because they will come to block you. The mind's job is to try to keep you safe. Now, very related to that is how fear shows up. And as Sylvia put it, fear had been her friend forever. And that fear is the armor that we build around ourselves to try to protect ourselves. But the problem is that it actually just keeps us from being our truest and best self. Number four, something that is very near and dear to my heart is to never let not knowing how to do something keep you from at least trying to do something. Now, by taking action, we begin to move closer to what it is that we want. I've said this hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, but action creates learning and it pulls us forward. Number five, you create the identity of a winner by what you do daily and by doing it consistently. And finally, number six, turn inward for your answers. Your answers are not outside of you. We all have this incredible innate wisdom and inner knowing, and we just need to create the space in our lives so that we can turn inward and we can let that emerge and we can listen to it. So thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. I appreciate all of you for being here. And by the way, if you know of someone who could benefit from this episode, I've put some directions in the show notes for how to share episodes on some of the most common platforms. I've had some questions around that, so I wanted to put those in the show notes to make it easy for you all, because I really appreciate you doing it. And I just hope that you all have a fantastic week and that you be well.